HD Smartcast.
You're listening to a Hindustan Times production brought to you by HD Smartcast.
Welcome to HD's A View from the Stands podcast, a series in which we'll discuss everything sports in the time of absolutely no sports. I'm Aditya Iyer, and with me is the national sports editor of Hindustan Times, Rudra Neel Sengupta.
Welcome to the third part of our sports movies podcast. If you did join us in the previous two, you would have heard us discussing boxing films exclusively in the first one and just Bollywood films in the second. And in the third one, and final part for sure this time around on sports films, we're going to do all other sports movies. So why don't you kick things off, Rudra?
Yeah, I'm not even sure this is going to be the final one. Since we have opened this up and, you know, into all genres of sports films,
yes,
I want to start by talking about what is possibly, for me, my most favorite sports film
ever.
And that's a movie called Foxcatcher.
Oh my God, fabulous. Yeah.
What a beautiful movie. And this has, so it's basically, I'll just tell you the plot, and there's no spoiler here because this is a true crime story. So, you know, you could actually know what's going to happen in the movie. And it's loosely based on this multimillionaire American businessman, DuPont. And he is, John DuPont is basically, in 1986, he recruits two brothers who are both Olympic gold medalist wrestlers from 1984. One is Mark Schultz and the other is Dave Schultz. And in fact, right now in the U.S., the national championship is named after them. And
that's right. What's it called again for our listeners?
The Mark Schultz Memorial.
I see. All right.
Yeah. So Mark and Dave Schultz, the two Olympic gold medalists from 1984, they are hired by John DuPont in 1986 because he has built this private wrestling facility in his humongous, sprawling mansion, farmhouse, you know, kind of thing. And basically, DuPont is a very lonely man. And he has this fantasy that he's a powerful wrestler, which he isn't, but he has a fantasy. And he wants to kind of hire these two brothers to build it, to help the U.S. team to win more Olympic medals. And then what happens finally is a very tragic, sad movie. What happens finally is that Mark gets shot and killed by DuPont. And every actor in this, the thing about this movie is that the three leads, Mark DuPont, John DuPont, Mark Schultz, Dave Schultz, the three actors who play the three leads are amazing, and they're completely fundamentally transformed. You have Channing Tatum as Dave Schultz.
Yep.
He has to lose his, you know, his boyish charm and his general action star, heroic body language swagger.
You know, apparently after shooting the film, he has cauliflower ears forever now.
Really?
Yeah.
I didn't know that.
Yeah.
Wow. Because he had cauliflower ears in the movie. I thought that was a prosthetic, but that's very cool.
A bit of it is prosthetic, but then because he had to learn the art of wrestling, he did it the right way, and if you do it the right way, you're going to have damaged ears, ear lobes.
Yeah.
And, I mean, you can see that Mark Ruffalo doesn't have it for, you know, when he's out to promote one of those ridiculous Marvel movies, you don't see it on his ears. But if you see Channing Tatum carefully enough and focus on his ears, you'll be able to see the fact that
that is seriously immersive stuff, man. For an actor to have a permanent scar on his on his head is something else.
But he was totally overshadowed by the other two, so please get to it, Rudra.
And then so you already named Mark Ruffalo. So Mark Ruffalo plays the balding, bulky champion wrestler going to see it, but also he has a family that he stays with, whereas Dave, on the other hand, is very lonely and stays alone. And you have Steve Carell, who's no more a comedian in this movie, and he achieves this kind of nasty, creepy menace. He's physically, his presence is very weak, but he's nonetheless extremely scary.
Oh my God, that role.
And, yeah, it's a crazy role, and it's a sad and gritty movie, and it's about loneliness. It's about three men who cannot really communicate, who are all lonely in their own ways. And and it's also about Steve Carell or DuPont's kind of homosexuality, which is repressed, and and he kind of through wrestling, through coming into close contact, he wants to feel something. And this movie soars on the back of its camera work, on the intense technicality of the wrestling scenes in every possible way. This is a brilliant, brilliant movie.
Incredible. So I'm going to stick with Wrestling 2. And I think you pretty much summed up my film by talking about Foxcatcher, because this one is called The Wrestler. It's about pro wrestling. It's not about amateur, which is real wrestling, like in the case of Foxcatcher. It's with a version of WWF, which is, everything is orchestrated and fake. But then Darren Aronofsky's The Wrestler is, it takes you like a cut deeper than most really superficial takes on pro wrestling, which is, it shows you, the flesh and bone side of it, and basically about how lonely this life is. So
it's a visceral movie, man. It's a visceral movie.
Oh, you've seen it, right?
Movie to watch, yeah.
Yeah, a lot of people thought Aronofsky kind of sold out when he made this film, because it has one of those twisted happy endings that none of his other films like Requiem and all had.
Right.
But I think they missed the point, man, and I think they missed Mickey Rourke's unbelievable portrayal of this fictional character called Randy the Ram Robinson. It's basically, so the story, you've seen it, but for our listeners, it's about this aging WWF-ish superstar who's not a superstar anymore. He lives in a trailer home, and he gets one last shot at, feeling that high that he did when he was at the prime of his career. And holy shit, it's an incredible film. Mainly because it's Aronofsky, but also everyone who acts in the film, right from Evan Rachel Wood to Marissa Tomei, but of course, Mickey Rourke really just gets into the character.
Right. Absolutely amazing movie.
So that's two wrestling movies between us, huh? Number one and number two.
Clearly, wrestling makes for good movies.
It clearly does. And again, a lot of it is about loneliness. Here, it's about Robinson's loneliness, right? And he'd do anything for company. He'd allow that little guy who lives in the next trailer park to beat him in a wrestling video game so that the guy hangs on for like 10 minutes longer. I mean, it's just, visceral. I think you, again, summed that up.
Right.
Also,
this wrestling provides you with this kind of template, I think, which is physical intimacy, but loneliness in the head, right? So
precisely, something that boxing films can't do, and which we have elaborated on so much before this, right? But that's our one and two.
Yeah. What's three?
Three is your turn.
Okay, so I'll pick Invictus.
Yeah. And very quickly, let me tell the listeners that Rudra fought me off on this film, because we both wanted to speak about it, but this is Rudra's favorite director in Clint Eastwood, and
thank you.
Yeah, okay, go on.
And I'm very happy that you let me have this.
You fought me off.
I love Clint Eastwood, Clint Eastwood fights off people. I didn't say that from him. I'm like, Dirty Harry. But
I think if Clint Eastwood directed Dirty Harry, he'd have done it very differently. Anyway, I'm sorry. That's my last.
That's true. Yeah, he would have. But Clint Eastwood has a thing for revenge. Most of his movies are about somebody out to get revenge.
Absolutely.
In some way. And sometimes, you know, as with Gran Torino or with Unforgiven, it has very disastrous, tragic consequences. But this is a movie that's not about revenge. This is, you know, a feel-good sports movie about the underdog team, about racial equality, about all kinds of things that will make you feel good, you know, and not to mention the soaring, like, lines from the poem in Victor's that's meant to charge you up. And so this basically the film is about South Africa in the mid-1990s, just after Nelson Mandela is elected as the president. And basically he's South Africa's first black president. He's come out of incarceration after decades and decades in jail. And South Africa's, you know, learning, really taking baby steps towards learning how to live in a post-apartheid world.
That's right.
And many of the whites in the film, most of them are African or nationalists, still attached to a system that, you know, that promoted apartheid, and they brace themselves for a payback as Mandela assumes power. But Mandela doesn't go that way, as we know historically. And what one of the first things he does is he wants to bring the white people and the black people together.
Yeah.
Which most people are baffled by this kind of thing, because they say, okay, you've been oppressed for so long. Why do you want to do anything to reconcile? But Mandela, being the greater man, he wants to reconcile. And so he picks the South African rugby team, which is a symbol of Afrikaner pride. Right? It is despised by most black people, the team Springbok mascot, and green and gold uniforms are seen as the racist symbol of white South Africa. But Mandela insists that this is the sport through which he will bring the country together. And South Africa is about to host the Rugby World Cup. And this movie is about Mandela trying to use rugby, the rugby team, to achieve a kind of racial unity. There's a beautiful kind of relationship that grows between him and the Springbok captain, who is an Afrikaner himself, Francois Pienaar, and who's played by Matt Damon.
Yep.
And Mandela is played by Morgan Freeman. She's got two great actors, two wonderful people.
Yeah.
And that's, you know, that's good enough reason to watch this movie. And there's a lot of great rugby sequences. And Matt Damon is so good at Francois Pienaar. And he gets that tricky, weird South African accent really, really well.
That's right. And I think a great reason to watch the film is your description of it, because I think you set it up beautifully. That's precisely what it's about why South Africa, unlike the rest of, a large part of Southern and Eastern Africa that kind of have like now slipped into dictatorial regimes, is because Mandela did not have this an eye for an eye quality about him. And a lot of it is shown in this movie through rugby, about how he tries to unify the country through rugby, and I think you summed it up perfectly.
Right, and then there's a very exciting finale, which is the final match in the Rugby World Cup between the All Blacks and the New Zealand team.
Yeah.
And
moment when they show Jona Lomu, you get scared.
Jona Lomu, yeah. Oh my God, yes.
Yeah.
Amazing. Jona Lomu crashing into Francois Pienaar.
Absolutely. But then, you know, that reaction on Morgan Freeman's face when he sees Jona Lomu for the first time, and he goes like, you know, you're everything you're built up to be, my friend.
That's so perfect.
Beautiful. So perfect. Beautiful.
Yeah.
Yeah.
What's your next pick?
Oh, yeah. Well, I was just thinking about it. But, I like a good, like a big sports event done well. And the 1976 Formula One season captured by a director that we've spoken about quite often in our podcast now, called Ron Howard, where he captures the rivalry between Niki Lauda, played by David Brühl, and James Hunt, played by Chris Hemsworth, who the millennials will know better as Thor. Right?
Yes.
So it's about the 96th season.
Are you saying that we're not millennials?
We're not, right?
Are you intimidating that we're old people?
Look at our movie choices. I highly doubt if we are, man.
I love Chris Hemsworth with Thor, by the way.
Oh, you do? Okay, I'm not a Marvel fan at all. At all.
Yeah, okay, but back to Rush.
Yeah, okay, but I do like Mark Ruffalo as the Hulk, but, you know, in some of the origin stories, but yeah, not all of them together in that, but anyway, yeah, so back to Rush. Rush is directed by Ron Howard. It's on the James Hunt, Niki Lauda rivalry. It's way more than just Formula One. It's not just for the petrol heads. It focuses on one season, the only season that James Hunt won. Again, like, this is not a spoiler round because, you know, this really happened. And Niki Lauda had from this aristocratic family in Austria, breaks away from his father because he loves to drive, and his father is like, what? That makes no sense. So he basically borrows a lot of money from one of the big banks in Austria whose, you know, logo he wears for the rest of the film. And the rest of the season in real life, and competes for Ferrari in 75 and wins the championship. And in 76, he's up against this young hot, heartthrob called, James Hunt. And Lauda maintained right till, you know, the day he died that, if he was ever jealous of one guy because of just how different their personalities were, it was always James Hunt. Kimi Raikkonen, who, it's famously a withdrawn Formula One driver. You know,
the Iceman.
Yeah, exactly. The only guy he has ever worshipped in Formula One, and he says this all the time, is James Hunt. And James Hunt is played by Hemsworth. And this is the season in which Niki Lauda's incredible accident takes place, right? And how both the accident, makes that season a little greater than it would have been in any case had it not taken place, and how, like, these two personalities get really close because of it. Anything more than that, I mean, can really be read, but, you just have to watch it for just how well it's been shot and how these guys, like, really get into the skins of these two completely opposite personalities.
Yeah, I mean, and the great racing scenes. This, watching this movie is a rush.
It is a rush, exactly. Yeah. Exactly.
It's a lot of adrenaline flowing there.
You know, car racing generally lends itself for, like, cinematic
magic. You can really overdo it.
They don't overdo it. Like Stallone's Driven. Have you seen Stallone's Driven?
No, I haven't.
Okay. So Stallone has made a lot of really crappy choices in his life. And when he was asked about what the worst of it was, quite recently after he turned 60 or something, he said, yeah, I think I wouldn't have done Driven. Like, if that was over the top for Sylvester Stallone, can you imagine how bad it must have been? Yeah. And Americans generally have this thing with indie movies, IndyCar 500 movies.
Right.
Like, you know, Tom Cruise's Days of Thunder and all that. They all make for great scenes. And the one that came out as recently as last year in Ford versus Ferrari. But, I think Rush just beats everything, man. And not just for its storyline, for the way it's shot.
Yeah, because sometimes it can get really cliched the way you shoot these racing scenes, and you know, you have all that gunning engine sound, and you've got like little one hand on the gearbox and then one foot steps on the pedal, and you know, and the screeching tires. So it lends itself to a lot of cliched movie making.
Absolutely.
So to get out of that trap is not easy, and I think Rush really gets out of that trap and does a fantastic job of it.
That's right. But because it's Ron Howard, I wonder, what touchy storyline in this film he throttled because it wasn't good enough to make it to the screen.
Yeah, sure.
It wasn't according to his sensibilities. Anyway, I think we should wrap this one up with a final pick by you, and then we're done with sports movies, guys.
All right, so I'll do a very quick one, and it's an odd choice, but I love this movie. It's way back 1992, way back when, so that, you know, kind of betrays our non-millennial vintage. but this is a movie called White Men Can't Jump. And I love this movie. Basically, this is about...
I haven't seen it.
You must see this. This is about two friends, one black, one white, who basically hustle people in pick-up basketball games. And what happens is basically, so you got Woody Harrelson playing the white person and Wesley Snipes playing the black person.
Okay.
What happens is Wesley Snipes goes to the pick-up games, right? And he starts trash-talking with everybody, says, I'll beat anybody. You know, you can give me anyone from this court as my partner, and I'll play with that guy, and I'll beat whoever you put up against me. and this always Woody Harrelson, you know, like this, like, big, very nerdy, geeky-looking white man.
Who'll be passing by.
Who's trying. Yeah, he's not passing by. He's hanging around at the back of somewhere. And obviously, the players choose him as Wesley Snipes' partner. Not knowing that Woody Harrelson was a college-level basketball star.
I see.
And so that's the hustle. So then the two of them play, and then they win, and they get money. And it's a thin movie, right? It's not much of a plot. It's essentially just about Wesley and Woody's raucous friendship and their motor mouse banter and equally fast and furious basketball street game. It's wonderful. It's colorful, sunny, loud, brash, and funny as hell.
This basically sounds like from a time in Hollywood where they loved their sports hustle films, like, you know, The Color of Money. With Paul Newman and Tom Cruise.
That's right. It's a bit like that, you know.
It's a bit like that.
It's very light and it's very lighthearted and very harmonious in a way. And it's great. I love it. I love everything about it. I love the R&B and hip hop soundtrack and oversaturated colors and the movie is set in Venice Beach, California, so it's lovely scenery as well and crazy colorful street fashion. So. I love it.
I mean, your voice gives that away for you, Rudra. I mean, like, you do not have to emphasize it anymore. We've spent three episodes talking about sports movies, and I really cannot, spend this time in a better way apart from possibly just watching those movies. So, yeah, thanks for listening. And if you guys have any comments, you know where to comment. And do watch some of them because, you know, this is quite an extensive list.
Yeah, I hope all of you watch these movies and have fun.
Fabulous. On that note, join us next time.
This was an episode of A View from the Stands. Do like and follow us on at HT Smartcast on Facebook, Instagram and Twitter, or write to us on podcasts@hindustantimes.com. You can listen to more podcasts by logging on to htsmartcast.com.
This was a Hindustan Times production brought to you by HT Smartcast.
HT Smartcast.
I'm Annie Apple, and I'm here to invite you to come and listen to my new podcast series, Raising a Pro. It's the most intimate sports-related conversations you will hear. Each week, we explore the journeys of some of your favorite NFL players through the eyes of those that know them best. From Joe Burrow, DeAndre Hopkins, Myles Garrett, Ezekiel Elliott, Nick and Joey Bosa, just to name a few. With exclusive insights and information, we leave no stone unturned. Subscribe now to Raising a Pro on your favorite podcast app.